We are awaiting the blue light. Let's try it again. Well, now we'll open this meeting of the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Services for March 24th, 2009. Senator Haas, welcome. Would you like to join us up here? Or
brief comment, that's okay.
Would you like, I guess I need to check your timeline. Would you like us to move your bill up a little farther on the agenda?
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you,
no,
are
we, you were, like we were going to do 35? An update on the new GI Bill, but we can move your bill up and hear it first, or unless you'd be interested in the presentation leading into it as well. Either
your,
way.
Your pleasure.
It's really your timeline.
I'm ready to do HB 2035.
I'm sorry?
I'm ready to do your 2035 bill.
Well, we'll at least open it, and then if we don't have, if we need to break for the rest of the discussion, then if that would help your time frame, we'll be happy to do that. All righty. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2035.
Madam
thank
Chair,
you for joining us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark Haas, Senate District 14. I very much want to thank you and the committee for having me over. I just want to say I, first of all, very much support House Bill 2035. This is sort of building upon the law we passed in February of 2008 when I helped a band of some handsome guys in back come forward and said, you know, what about this? What about widows and orphans of vets who have fallen? And it seemed like such a great idea. But I didn't know if we could afford it, and we worked back and forth with the Chancellor's office, who said, I don't know that there's going to be that many if the eligibility date is 9/11. And I think we could do it in kind of the notion of back of the classroom opening, the notion that there's always some empty seats in a classroom, and I think we can get it through universities. And that was great. We had a work group on it, and I want to explain this to you just to keep it in context. And the idea, I think, from the Chancellor's office, from my standpoint, was basically us saying that we can never replace the loss you've had in your life, but we can help transform your life with a university education, courtesy State of Oregon. And I feel very good about that, and I think it was one of the highlights of that session last year. And I know that that has already happened. There's only a dozen or so cases, people who have enrolled in the university system under this program, but it's already beginning to do that. And I think we're living up to that. And so this bill, the most important thing I think it does is lift that 9/11 restriction for eligibility. And I think that's a very important change. And the veterans groups came to me last summer and said, why don't we do this? And I think we're continuing to build on it piece by piece. And those of you who have been around for a while know that that's the best way to get things done in this building. So that's what I'm here to support. And I'm also very carefully watching what you do here, because this very similar language of this legislation is over in the House Education Committee, in which I'm a chair, and we have it up for hearing next week. I'm all about efficiency, and I would love to scrap that hearing if you were to pass it out and send it over this way. So that's really all I have, and I wish you the best of luck in sorting out some amendments here that I'm not going to comment on, but I do support the notion of this bill and its form to lift this restriction on eligibility.
Thank you, Senator. And a question for you, just for clarification for the committee. The bill that you have on the Senate side in the House is limited to just that issue of taking the after September 11, 2001, language out of this particular statute. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So that, for you, is the key piece here in this?
I think so. I would want, you know, I don't want to let perfect get in the way of good. I'd rather pass a bill than let one stay behind.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for the senator while we have him here? Well, I appreciate getting that in, and because there are a number of other issues to discuss with this bill, I think I'm going to recess the rest of the discussion then on it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2035 temporarily and go ahead with our informational view on the update on the new GI Bill, and I'm doing it in that order because I think that it's appropriate that we fully understand what the new GI Bill entails before we move on to some of these other educational discussions. So we have Matthew Belay with us today, who has been shepherding this as it moves through the federal system, as I understand it, and he's the expert that can tell us all about it.
Well, I hope
so. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for having me here today to discuss the new GI Bill. By way of background, I'll briefly let you know I listed in the Marine Corps Reserve in 1997, served in Iraq from February to September 2003, the very beginning of the war. For the last 2 years, I've led two related efforts. One is called the Fund for Veterans Education. It's a privately funded scholarship program for veterans. We established it 2 years ago to demonstrate the need for a new GI Bill. And the second effort was a lobbying effort called the Campaign for New GI Bill, designed expressly for that purpose, to lobby the federal government, to lobby Congress for a new GI Bill. It passed. It was signed into law last summer. And as you know, in just 6 months, VA will begin making payments. The Department of Veterans Affairs has made implementation of the new GI Bill one of its top priorities, but nonetheless, there's a lot of work to be done. And I'm going to emphasize at the outset that there are still a number of unresolved questions about benefits, eligibility, and implementation. So part of the answer to specific questions is stay tuned, keep an eye on what happens in D.C. The answers aren't all out. I can tell you a few things about benefits and eligibility. The bill is designed, modeled after the GI Bill of 1944. The goal was to change the structure of benefits so that veterans could go to the college of their choice. That hasn't happened for the last 60 years. It comes very close to happening in this new GI Bill. Eligibility is defined by service, military service, after September 11th, 2001. The maximum benefit is available to veterans who served at least 36 months on active duty. For those who served in the Guard and Reserve, as I did, there's a significant change in the way service is calculated. It's now calculated in a cumulative fashion. So if you had non-consecutive tours of duty, those will be accumulated together rather than under the previous structure where the longest single term of service defined the benefits you're eligible for. The post 9/11 GI Bill will pay veterans the following: tuition and fees paid directly to the school. That, again, is a change. In the past, payments went to the veteran, the individual veteran. Now tuition and fees are paid directly to the school. There's a monthly housing allowance based on the basic allowance for housing, BAH, for the rank of E5 with dependents. It's determined by the location of the school. I looked up for the Salem zip code, and the monthly rate is $970. That's a significant increase in benefits, $970 a month for every month that you're enrolled full-time in school. Active duty members, veterans enrolled half-time or less, and veterans enrolled in distance education programs or online courses are not eligible for that housing allowance. In addition to tuition, fees, and the monthly housing allowance, books and supplies, there's a stipend for books and supplies of $1,000 a year that is paid proportionally based on enrollment. So part-time students will earn half of that. And for those who qualify, there's a one-time rural benefit of $500. If the veteran resides in a county with six persons or less per square mile. On page two, there's a chart that shows eligibility. This is taken from the Department of Veterans Affairs. As I stated, maximum benefit is for those who have served 36 months of active duty service. As you can see, if you serve less, there's a percentage of the maximum benefit payable. Eligibility for reserve and guard is also paid as a percentage of the maximum benefit available to those who serve 36 months. I served 1 7-month tour, so you can see from the chart I would be able to receive benefits at 50% of the maximum. And you'll see it's the chart lays out longer terms of service. Let's talk specifically about tuition and fees and that benefit. The goal of the legislation is to provide tuition and fees such that a veteran can attend the most expensive public school in their state as an in-state student. There are provisions in something called the Yellow Ribbon Program, which we'll talk about, for veterans who attend out-of-state schools or attend a private school. Attachment C lists in a very preliminary way, and I want to emphasize how preliminary this is, the VA's listing of the maximum charge per credit hour and the maximum fee per term by state. One of the reasons this is preliminary is based on the way that the VA did this. They looked separately at the maximum charge per credit hour. They found the highest in any given state for the credit hour charges. Then they looked separately for the maximum total fees. Could be at a different school, it was the maximum fee. Now, it's unclear if they're going to continue to separate those two in that way, or if they're going to, the reason being, it doesn't make sense for a student to be, students going to be charged the maximum tuition and fees at one school, not the maximum tuition at one school and the maximum fees at another. So it's unclear if the VA is going to continue to define benefits in this separated fashion or not. If they don't, and they change and they look to one single school that has the highest combined tuition and fees, the numbers are going to look very different from what you see here. You'll see one of the complaints, criticisms of the way this is being implemented is the disparity between states. And I think that's apparent when you look at this chart that lists it by state. Let me talk briefly about the Yellow Ribbon Program. It's a provision of the post 9/11 new GI Bill that is intended to allow veterans to attend out-of-state schools or private schools. In effect, essentially, it's a VA's commitment to match dollar for dollar up to 50% of the difference between an out-of-state or private school tuition and the highest in-state tuition for that particular veteran. So that if a school enters into agreement with the VA to participate in the Yellow Ribbon Program, it's possible for the veteran to have 100% of their tuition and fees waived. The VA, the school, I'm sorry, waives 50% of the difference, and VA matches that 50%. On the bottom of page 3 and top of page 4, you'll see some of the requirements for schools that wish to participate in the Yellow Ribbon Program. These 4 or 5 points largely are about the school being consistent, fair to all of their veterans. It's on a first-come, first-served basis. It's not competitive amongst veterans. And whatever the school commits to pay in the first year, they're required to pay through graduation for that particular student. Attachments A and B are examples of how the benefits for tuition fees will be calculated. I've taken these from the VA website. I think it's fairly self-explanatory. I'm not going to walk through it, but if you have questions, I'm happy to answer them. What the VA is good at doing right now is showing how this process of benefits can be calculated. They're not so clear yet on what the level of the benefits are going to be. But for constituents who are interested in understanding what the process is, I think this is helpful. Finally, your staff asked me to address 3 specific questions. First, what impact do outside scholarships have on GI Bill benefits? The answer is none. If the school pays for the tuition, then the VA will simply not pay that portion of tuition. If it's an outside scholarship that bypasses the school, then the veteran will, in effect, receive additional money. Number two, how is in-state or out-of-state residency determined for students taking online courses? The first part of the answer is that residency requirements are determined by each state. As far as the VA is concerned, the tuition and fee cap is determined by the school where the main campus of the online courses is based. For example, if an Oregon student is taking online courses through a California school, the student will be eligible for benefits up to California's tuition and fee cap, but will likely be charged as an Oregon student, as an out-of-state student. Another point to remember for veterans taking online courses is that they're not eligible for the housing allowance if they're taking 100% of their courses online. Finally, number three, if a student withdraws from a course in the middle of a semester, does the VA try to recover payment? The frank answer is watch out. This is going to be messy. Probably the VA will. It depends on when the student withdraws and if they withdraw at a point at which in the semester which they're still eligible for their tuition to be refunded. A veteran who withdraws could be responsible for repaying both tuition and fees as well as the living allowance if they withdraw fully. Completes my prepared testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Pardon me, but I didn't see you. Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, it seems like as we progress, we seem to make things more complex. I remember when I had the GI Bill, you were allocated so much money a term period. If you dropped out, you had so many terms period. You paid for that dearly because you gave up part of your life for that, for the country. But these formulas are very interesting that we're talking about someone that drops out. There may be a legitimate reason. There may not be a legitimate reason. But if my memory serves me correct, it didn't matter back in the latter 60s, early 70s. You were just allocated so much money, period. And if you chose not, you know, if you went to school, you're enrolled in school, you received that benefit. But if you dropped out, I don't think they came back and asked you for the money back. You're just out that for your long-term educational process. Is that correct?
That's right. You essentially had a number of months of eligibility, and if you dropped out halfway through a semester, you lost whatever was paid that semester. There's a process the VA is trying to establish for veterans who are facing extenuating circumstances and wouldn't be required to pay that back. I agree with your sentiment. I don't think anyone wants to see veterans having to pay back money for school because they, for one reason or another, had to drop out.
This will go into effect when?
August of this year. No schooling before that point will be reimbursed. So this is as of August 2009 going forward.
One more question.
Representative Escobar?
Now, I haven't had a chance to read this through and through and through. Do these veterans lose these benefits after so long?
15 years.
Now, my question is, why do we do that?
I didn't want to do that.
And I look back. I'm a Vietnam-era veteran. Some of the people I served in country with, they were home, but they were still in Vietnam for 20 years. And maybe they got their act together. They came home finally psychologically. They wanted to go to school but they no longer had that benefit. I'm just perplexed that I don't care if you're in the Spanish-American War, or you were in the Vietnam War, or you were in Iraq, you should have that benefit because you've paid dearly for that benefit. Why did the federal government do this?
I agree. You've earned the benefit, as I see it. The original draft legislation, Senator Webb, had no time limit. The VA and the previous administration forced him to include that. I don't think there's a compelling logic that I can defend. It's the rationale's largely VA's argument about keeping track of benefits long term. It's
Representative Esquivel, this is the messenger.
It's federal logic, and that bothers me.
And we very much appreciate your willingness to come and tell us about this.
I'll tell you, Representative, you know, anecdotally, when the legislation was first introduced, Senator Webb had the VA telling him that this would be too hard to implement for a million or so veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. And he said, you know, in 1945, federal government, long before there were computers, administered benefits to 8 million veterans who came home. If we can do it then, we can damn well do it now. And but the questions were asked, can we do it?
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other questions? I appreciate having the information as we are going to try to wrestle with a variety of bills that relate to education and educational benefits. It's helpful to know what we have coming to our current era veterans as of next school year. And so that's why we wanted to preface the educational discussion with this information, and I appreciate your availability and willingness to come.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. So we have that for a reference document now. With that, we will return to a public hearing on House Bill 2035. Mr. Molina, we got off to sort of a different start.
Did.
You want to try again here and
yes,
tell
ma'am.
Us what we're talking about?
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2035, what the measure does, it expands post-secondary institution tuition waiver at Oregon University System institutions and community colleges for children, spouses, and unremarried surviving spouses of deceased or 100% disabled members of the Armed Forces of the United States. It removes the September 11th, 2001 provision, and it declares an emergency effective July 1, 2009. And we do have some amendments that have been drafted that you should have before you, and I can go into those in more detail as we go through. Would you like to go into those now, Madam Chair?
No, I don't think we'll go into the amendments right at this particular moment.
All right.
Thank you.
Just to revise, and we... that's it.
Okay. Thanks. What I would like to do is begin with Joe Holliday, John Wyckoff, and Bill...
Tolliver,
I'm sorry. And maybe we can get a little background on the current system and where we are and some of the perspective is behind. Essentially, there are two changes kind of before us. One is to remove the date, September 11th, with the 2001, with the feeling that a veteran is a veteran is a veteran, as has been consistent in much of what we've done. And then secondarily, an insert to add to community college to the statutory language, and hopefully you folks can help us with that part of it a little bit. Welcome, and thank you for coming. Where do you want to start?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joe Holliday. I am an assistant vice chancellor with the Oregon University System. I'll be brief. The chancellor's office has reviewed this bill and its amendments, and we fully support it.
In the original form, or have you had a chance to review the amendments?
Madam Chair, it is the amendments. We are supporting it with the amendments.
Okay. Any questions? Go ahead. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Wyckoff. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Community College Association. I will be brief, but maybe not quite as brief as Joe was. When this concept came up in the 2008 session, I testified before the Senate committee that in concept the colleges are supportive of this idea, but we had a concern about including community colleges in the statutory language because it upsets the current relationship of how tuition policy is set in the state of Oregon, which is a local control issue. The local boards that govern the colleges are the ones that set tuition policy, and so what we had said to the committee was this is something that the colleges can implement, serving this community is really core to the mission of the colleges, and that the colleges would be willing to do so, but didn't want to change or alter the way that tuition policy is set in the state of Oregon, because you could get to this without doing it. And at the time, we testified that most of the colleges have, nearly all the colleges have have an array of benefits for veterans and their families. Several of the colleges actually had the provision for fallen soldiers, and none had the disability piece. The committee did not include community colleges in that language, but had everybody report back on where that was. I think you all have in front of you, or got it in email, a copy of sort of where we are as of today. And it is not fully implemented. It is about, we are a little more than halfway there. We have most of the colleges have moved toward that. And as you can see, the ones that haven't have all committed to doing so at their April or May board meeting. Some have to present it and then go back and vote on it the next time. The point being, for those who don't, you will have confirmation that they have before the end of the legislative session, so that you will know where it hasn't been done that it has, and we can provide you the language of each policy so that you have confirmation that that is done. One of the things that held up some of the colleges was there was a concern based on a misunderstanding of what they were supposed to do about whether they would be having to make the determination of whether somebody was 100% disabled, not realizing that that isn't a determination they make, that that person comes with a classification. That is a piece that they can put in. We had some others that were struggling with other ways to do it, to make it more expansive. Clatsop Community College, for example, is including spouses and dependents of Peace Corps volunteers who may be killed doing their service. And so they have a policy that they will be bringing to their April board meeting. The colleges are supportive of the concept and have all committed. The ones that have not fully implemented have committed to doing so at one of their next two board meetings so that they can verify to you before the end of the session that they have done so. With that, I will conclude my comments.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Bill Tolomer. I'm the Vice President of Student Services and Government Relations at Lynn Benton Community College. I'm also a reservist of the United States Coast Guard and a veteran of an Operation Enduring Freedom. My task on the campus is to make sure that the vets get these particular benefits and make sure that our campus is veteran-friendly. One of the things I'd like you to understand is this is one piece of a whole lot of things that we do on a college campus for veterans and their families. We have 11,000 veterans in the Lynn Benton County areas. We have 272 on our campus. On our FAFSA award, the financial aid award, they can check. That's how we know who's on our campus. One of the issues, one of the problems, the spouses and children, when they show up on our campus, they don't have to check anything. We don't know where they are. We don't know who they belong to or how to get them these particular benefits. So we're working with some of those issues to do that. In that, we have on campus is a specialist, a VA specialist. That's what that individual does. It works with the VA people. It works to help them navigate the process. As anybody who works with the government, the military understands it's a unique, lengthy process. It takes a lot of perseverance, and sometimes it's hard to navigate without some help. So we have a specialist that does that. Also in our particular purvey are disability services. They work with the voc rehab people hand in hand with our agencies to make sure that it's an easy handoff for them. If they have disabilities, there's a way to get them documented without them having to go ahead and say, I am this. They don't have to self-declare, which is a huge issue right now with our veterans and their family members. They don't want anybody to know. They're hiding. They don't really come out and say, hi, I'm a veteran. You have to kind of get them in a place where it's comfortable. So that's one of the areas we're able to do that. Also, that the county work that goes together, the VA, we work with them. We have a task force together. Most community colleges have a task force. That includes the community college, the four-year institutions, the unemployment group, the housing group. There's a lot of homeless vets that are out there that we work with, and we come together as a community to make sure we're all not duplicating services, and there's one area where everybody can come to so they can get the same services. So we're all on the same page with that, and that's really important because, number one, the resources are limited. But if you don't have to go to 10 different people, it's a whole lot easier for the veterans. That's one thing we want to make sure we do, and we're good about that in our communities. We also have on our campus veterans work-study positions, where they actually can come and work while they're going to college and use those positions and paid by the federal funds. That's another issue they can have on top of their VA benefits. So that's another service we provide. One of the last things is an online certification program. When they get in and they're deployed somewhere else, they can finish that program online. They don't have to get out of the program. They don't have to stop. They can keep using that program in the online environment, and we give them as much leeway as they need to finish those. So one of the things about this is we fully believe in this, but our real goal is to, if we don't get in at the pre-deployment stage when the units are leaving and we don't get back in as the reintegration, when they get back into the states, it's hard for us to get to the people to let them know the services that we have. We're extremely, extremely veteran-friendly, and we're working on ways to kind of get our whole system to move that way. It is something that we all value, but we're all working towards that. With the board meetings, we'll all be on the same page on this. As a veteran, I appreciate your diligence in making sure we hold our feet to the fire. I want you to understand that from my heart as a veteran. I appreciate that. But I want to let you know, on our campuses, we're making sure those people have a way to get what they need in their families. That's the real issue, is the families. We partner with social services so they get a chance to have the services they need from the PTSD or the mental health, child care, all those issues we take care of on the campus. So that's what I want to let you know, just so you understand. This is a bigger piece. This isn't just the one piece. This is a bigger piece of services we provide for those who are laying their life down for the country. And I thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I met with Mr. Wyckoff earlier, and so my question is for Lynn Benton, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Are you supportive of this bill as amended, or are you saying, because as I understand it, I think the Oregon Community College Association is kind of hoping to keep this under their local control. Is that correct? So are you supportive of the bill? I know, and I appreciate what you're doing for veterans, and I'm very proud to say Mount Hood Community College on the list of yes and yes as well. But are you in support of the bill, sir?
I'm in support of the local control, just because we're able to do different things with different veterans. When you have a reservist, as I am, in my unit we have 3 PhDs. So the services they need at a community college are totally different than an active duty person would need. And if I can't provide that because it's in a legislative form instead of a local control, I won't be able to do that. So I'm more in favor of the local control part of this.
Madam Chair, follow-up, please. And so I guess while we're here, Mr. Wyckoff, if you don't mind, I don't want to put you directly on the spot, but I want to ask you, if this whole panel chose not to move forward on this particular bill for whatever reason, is it your understanding that you'd be able to make this happen and implement this throughout the Community College Association and make sure that we would all be moving towards, in a sense, this bill without the bill?
Chair Cowan, Representative Matthews, we will, yes. I mean, the short answer is yes. And you will get from us confirmation in April and May, because, as I said, there will be some that won't process-wise get to it till May, regardless of what happens with the bill.
Thank you. Any other questions for these gentlemen? I want to take testimony from some additional folks that we have here, and I'm hoping that you'll be able to stick around if we have additional questions for you after that.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Wayne Harvey and Robert Thornhill, could we have you two come up at the same time? Okay. Mr. Harvey, let's start with you, and if we could have you identify yourself for the record, I'd appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Chairwoman Cowan, members of the committee, my fellow veterans, and distinguished guests. For the record, my name is Wayne Harvey. I am the current president of the Retired Enlisted Association, TRIA, here in Oregon. Our organization represents over 800 veterans that have retired after serving in the enlisted ranks for at least 20 years on active duty in the United States military. On behalf of the members of my organization and my fellow military retirees, I come to you today to plead with you for your help to do what is needed to pass House Bill 2035, which expands the post-secondary institution tuition waiver for children, spouses, and unremarried spouses, surviving spouses of deceased or disabled veterans. I want to thank the Oregon legislature for voting on House Bill 1066 during last year's special session and getting it into Oregon law. However, I want to implore this committee to work with your colleagues in the House and in the Senate this year to pass House Bill 2035, which would remove the arbitrary date of September 11, 2001 from that law, and to also expand the coverage to include our community colleges in the most expeditious manner possible, so as to allow the incoming freshmen in the fall of 2009 to have access to this valuable resource. The number of veterans' family members that would be impacted by House Bill 2035 is minimal when you realize this would only affect veterans whose spouses and children are within the age restrictions that have been previously outlined. Based on this, the fiscal impact is minimal, if any. Earlier, you heard testimony from the community colleges and their representatives that the community colleges are not in favor of House Bill 2035 with its amendments or without its amendments, that they feel that they are working on this issue independently and they are going to make it happen, and they favor local control without it being legislated. I want to remind the committee that this is exactly what they said in their testimony in the special session on February 2008 when Senate Bill 1066 was heard in the Senate Education Committee. 13 months later, we still don't have it at community colleges. Not all the community colleges are on board, and then not all doing the same things. And even in the chart that was provided by the community college representative, some schools, there's still no answers there. And I understand that their intent is to get that individually in April and May. My concern is that if it's not in the legislation, we're going to go another year and maybe possibly before they join with the program. Thank you very much, members of the committee, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Harvey? Mr. Thornhill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robert Thornhill. I appear before you in support of House Bill 2035. In doing so, it is my honor and privilege to speak for members of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, several of whom have accompanied me here to this hearing. They are sitting in the back, Tom Lang, past Department Commander of Oregon, VFW, my VFW Post 1442 Commander, Marion Ellsworth, Bert Key, Oregon VFW Judge Advocate, 1442 Adjutant, past District Commander George Winslow, 1442 member Phil Anderson, and a couple of comrades from that war of long ago, WW2, Dick Strand and Jack Glocko. I would like for the record to show their presence here today, and hopefully their presence will have made a difference. I'll summarize my written testimony. Next to the soldiers themselves, no one has sacrificed more for America's causes than the children and spouses of the deceased and severely disabled soldiers. In recognition of their sacrifices, the 2008 session of the Oregon Legislature enacted SB 1066 Tuition Waiver Program. Excuse me. This gift from the people of Oregon will not bring back or make whole their loved ones. It will, however, give the children and spouses involved a chance at an education they might not otherwise have been able to achieve. Moreover, it assures the soldier going off to war that at least a down payment has been made on the education of his or her soldiers. One less distraction from the immediate task of soldiering. To expand this program by removing the date of 9/11/01 and by including community colleges is the right thing to do. The sacrifices, heartbreak, and needs of families of deceased and disabled of conflict preceding 9/11/01 are no less than those that follow that date. They deserve equal treatment. Community colleges are public institutions, no less so than universities. Therefore, they should be required by law to contribute their share to this gift to the children of Oregon. Moreover, it is believed many eligible prefer workforce development programs to the more academic programs of the universities, at least at the start of their college career. And if the community college says they're going to do it anyway, then why object to the law? To the recipients, the waiver of tuition may be considered a benefit, a gift, and that it is. However, it is much more than a benefit. It is a virtually a cost-free investment. And I suggest the return on this investment will be much greater than the GI Bill of World War II. It is an investment I believe the people of Oregon will wholeheartedly support. It will not eliminate America's education deficit, but it will help. As President Lincoln so aptly said, we the people of the United States must care for those who have borne the brunt of the battle and for their widows and children. I urge the committee to approve House Bill 2035. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'll be pleased to try to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. I apologize for my voice here. Are there any questions of either of these two individuals? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have Mac McDonald and Kevin O'Reilly.
Why don't you go first?
I'll let you arm wrestle to see who's going first.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, and I represent the United Veterans of Oregon, which is every federally chartered veterans organization in the state and some uncharted. A veteran is a veteran is a veteran. We'd like to see 9/11 figure taken out of there. We treat all veterans the same. The date which they served really has no bearing on them being a veteran. The second thing is, the Second Amendment dealing with the community colleges, we feel is necessary. And you heard testimony in the 08 session. We were kind of misled. They said they were already doing it or would do it shortly. They haven't done it. Some of them do it differently. If this bill passes, it means all community colleges will be the same. There'll be no confusion as to what they're responsible for and how it would be applied. We submit that this is a good bill, and we ask for a due pass. If there are any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Thank you. Go ahead, Kevin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm here today advocating for the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America, the state chapter of a National Veterans Service Organization. Our members are all obviously severely disabled. They're paralyzed. It's either from a spinal cord injury, disease, MS, or ALS. And just to, I don't know if you know this or not, but ALS just this last fall was made presumptive for military service. It's now a service-connected disease. About 60% of those who contracted, 60% more, have been veterans than non-veterans. And there's no rhyme or reason. There's no period of service or where they serve that's making this. It's one of those oddities in life, unlike diabetes. Since September, PVA's Portland service officer has worked with 20 new widows and 26 veterans who are currently suffering with ALS. Just thought I'd bring that up. It's kind of interesting. In the past, a few people have come up and described military service as one where we protect and serve. And that's a nice way of describing it, but I think that's more what the police do, and I think that because I read it on the side of the police car. I think that it is the duty of the military to defend the nation from its enemies. And there's a difference in looking at what these two different groups do. One protects and serves. The other one defends. It goes to war. It engages in combat. When it's not in war, it's preparing for war. And that's why we have a veteran as a veteran. If you didn't serve in combat, you were getting ready to serve in combat. That's what we do. Oh, I can miss some of this. I'm the one who requested the amendment to allow the guardsmen in, and there's a reason for that. And the guard, when they serve us here in the state, that is no less deserving service than national service when they go over and pull duty in some foreign land where they probably don't want to be. Here in the state, when they help us out in times of crisis, and they can be injured and they can be killed during these. It could be an earthquake they're helping out with, or picking somebody off the side of a mountain. And the helicopter can just as easily be slammed into the side of the mountain by a gust of wind as not. That service is just as important to us here in the state as their national services to the nation, and no less deserving than this benefit. And also, I admit, and rather with a bit of shame, I was born and raised in North Dakota, and a couple years ago, I was looking at education benefits state by state, and I ran across a similar benefit to this one in North Dakota that did include the National Guard on state service, and that's where I came up with a wonderful idea. And, you know, we love our Guard. I have to apologize. I was wrong. I had thought that there were only about 2,400 100% service disabled veterans in this state, and the number is actually closer to 4,900. So I've been saying something that's not true, and I apologize for that. It also turns out that the number, a couple years back, it was 4,200, so we have some 600-700 more in the state now than we did. Right now it's 4,889, I think, is what the number is. Tom could tell us for sure. Right at the moment, back in 2005, there were about 4,200. So maybe 4,500 might be an average. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because even if we don't lift this date, which, again, doesn't make sense to those of us who served, but over time, over the next 10, 20, 30 years, we're still going to have probably a constant number of hopefully no more than 4,000 to 5,000 100% service-disabled veterans in the state. And how many will die in line of duty is anybody's guess. It depends on how much more we get involved in foreign conflicts. As you know, that 4,200, that 4,900 is an age-diverse population. Currently, many of these guys, their children will already be grown and no longer eligible for the benefit, or their spouses will have been educated, that sort of thing. However, we expect, again, through time, that'll change, and eventually everybody's children and spouses will be eligible. Unfortunately, many of our disabled veterans they receive a compensation from the VA, from the federal government, for their disability. Unfortunately, their disabilities have defined who they are. Most of them will never get more than what that compensation check is, and it's currently right around $2,900 a month, or about $3,400 a year, is what it turns out, neighborhood. And that's all they're ever going to get. They'll never be able to find gainful employment. They'll never have anything more than that. Their chance at having the American dream, whatever that is for you, is defined by that amount of money. And that's not really enough. $3,400 a year isn't enough to help a child pay for college. In today's society, we know that it takes two incomes to have the quality of life we expect to have in America. If we can help the spouse gain an education so that she can get a good job and a good family wage position, then we can help that family achieve the American dream. In many instances, the spouse is the one who cares for the disabled veteran. They give up their own aspirations, their own hopes, their own dreams to care for that veteran. They don't go outside to work. If that veteran dies, this benefit would allow that spouse to get an education so that they can have a decent quality of life. And that's another good thing. And then the last bit was going on about the community colleges who've already spoke. And it seems like they're moving in the direction we would all like to see them move in. And I'm, unfortunately, a skeptic. It's probably from years of experience being a veteran. And leaving something up to local control means locally they can remove that. And with shades of Vietnam over my head, we would hope that doesn't happen 20 years from now when they look at their budget and they go, oh, well, we could cut out this benefit and save ourselves $10,000 or $20,000 a year. We would hope that wouldn't happen, but it could under local control. We urge that it, the amended version be moved with, including the community colleges under this benefit. And, of course, I'm more than happy to any question that you might have for me.
Thank you. Are there any questions for either of these gentlemen? Thank you very
much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Was there anyone else who wanted to testify on this bill, House Bill 2035, today? Hello.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Greg Warnock, Oregon War Veterans Association, and we would like to also support the bill. We understand there's some dynamics here regarding state and county interactivity, and we think, though, that the federal government should be doing its responsibility. The state government should be working as best it, as it can to do what it can, and the counties also ought to be doing what they can. And concept, we support this bill. And hope for its passage. I might just make a note, after talking with Matthew for just a moment, who gave testimony earlier about the new GI Bill, there will be some transferability of that GI Bill for educational benefits to the children of that veteran. And so I think the overall cost to the state for these funds is going to be less than what's probably projected now. I don't have numbers on that, and Matthew can probably come back or provide additional information to you on that for revenue purposes. But we support the bill completely and hope for its passage. And I'm willing to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions? I think it might be helpful just for some clarification from whomever the experts are. In terms of the applicability of an existing statute that resulted from Senate Bill 1066 in 2008 to the members of our National Guard, if maybe one of the university or the community colleges could talk to that. I'm a little confused as we look at amendments proposing to include them. Can one of you let us know if they're currently included? Go ahead, Mr. McDonald. If anybody else wants to join in, they're welcome to.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe that under the Bill 1066, the National Guard would have to be under Title 10, which is activated for national service.
Okay.
And would not cover them under state service.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if the question is whether colleges are currently doing this,
yeah.
I've just heard that Lynn Benton does include it. I don't know the answer to that. I do know, for example, and it's listed on the sheet there, Blue Mountain includes all deployed for the spouse independence on the deceased part. My only point being, some of them are, in that case, it is more expansive. But as far as whether it includes Guard, I'd have to go through them and get back to you.
Okay, and I think there's also some question about whether it would apply to only Guard that are deployed under Title 10, or if it would also apply to members of the National Guard who are in service under Title 32.
I think we would probably follow the committee's direction as we implement that, and whatever the intent was, the colleges would include that.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Molina, could you go through the amendments that are proposed here, and then we'll talk a little bit about where we're going from here.
Absolutely, ma'am. So
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2035, amendments. Basically replaces the provision of the bill. It's a gut and stuff. It adds a member of the Oregon National Guard called into active service under Title 10 or Title 32. And one of three things happen. Either he or she dies on active duty, dies as a result of service-connected disability, or three, is 100% disabled as the result of a service-connected disability. So it's 100% disabled. It adds community college in there. It removes the 9/11 provision. To clarify for the community college, it adds a certificate or an associate's degree because they don't offer a bachelor's at a community college. And it adds a reverse transfer option available to qualify students who may already hold a certificate, associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree. And it increases the age limit of the child, of the son or daughter, from 23 years of age to 26 years of age. It adds an emergency clause, which becomes effective July 1, 2009.
Do you have fiscal impact as a result of if the amendments were approved?
No, Madam Chairman, I do not have a dash okay. one on fiscal on this.
Okay. Committee, I think that there are some questions presented as I've tried to sort of sort through these. Some of the challenges that face us are that it's not a state versus a county issue per se as much as there's a differing structure for tuition setting in the Oregon University system and the community college system, so that directives that work within the Oregon University system don't work quite the same way for community colleges, hence the reason for their testimony that this implementation is progressing and is expected to be accomplished by the end of the year, but at the end of the school year, but still under their methodologies of setting tuition at the local level. So there is a challenge of us adopting statute. There's some conflicts with the way those tuitions are set. I think that we need some clarity on the National Guard issue and what is or isn't currently being implemented by the universities that are participating in this existing program as per the 2008 bill, Senate Bill 1066. What we discovered in the attempt to submit some amendments was that legislative council found the initial drafting of the bill with only one line in it that said a community college was inadequate, that it wasn't correctly drafted because down below then it talks about eligible post-secondary institutions and baccalaureate degrees and master degrees and that sort of thing. So that's why they felt that if that line is to be included, the bill then requires a complete rewrite, which is what you see in the rather extensive amendments that we have before us. What we do have is agreement from virtually everybody that we've heard from that the date September 11, 2001 needs to be removed from statute. And that's what the Senate bill that's proposed does, is just makes that one change. So I think what we will do at this point, unless the committee differs, is we will probably take this back for an additional amendment, a dash two, that would remove the community college reference and leave the bill simply changing taking that September 11th date out, and then bring those two, the dash one and dash twos, back for further consideration by the committee and deliberation on this issue. Representative Riley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I tend to agree with Senator Haas that I hate to see perfect stand in the way of good, and I think that your suggestion lets us go ahead with something good. So thank you for that.
Okay. And I guess the other choice is then that the Senate may take this up on their side next week instead, and if they choose to do that, it may negate the reason for this one. So does that work for folks? We'll try to take a look at the whole thing then. Okay, with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2035. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2571. Too many papers here.
So we need this on here.
Yes, let's give just a moment while we get the sign-up sheet here. Yes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2571 would require all Oregon universities and colleges to charge in-state tuition and fees for honorably discharged veterans. It removes the residency requirements for persons receiving educational benefits for veterans. And there is a dash 3 to this. I don't want to get the committee confused here, so the dash 1 and 2 are editorial typos. So the 3 is finally what they agreed on. And so there is no other amendments out there. It's just this one.
Only one before
only
us.
Only one before us, yes, okay. Ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And this would mandate, I can go into that now. Or
go ahead, yes.
It would mandate veterans pay the same rate for distance learning as non-veterans. It would require institutions to participate in the Yellow Ribbon Program. It would mandate the veterans live in the state to qualify for the benefit. It declares an emergency effective on passage.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Committee, we have had this before us once before. This is a bill that came as a recommendation of the task force, and I see that we have Brigadier General Caldwell, Paula Brown with us. Maybe you'd like to refresh our memories here. And whomever is part of your team today.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Brigadier General Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Military Department, our leader of the team, Mr. Evans, Major Evans, is on a furlough day today, so he couldn't be here. So I think that's rather fitting, given but he's doing it at Camp Rialia, which makes it okay. So we're glad that he's doing that. Our position is same it was in the task force. This is a good. We think this is good for the state. We think we get good, solid citizens if we can get veterans to come here and do their education. And I think even more importantly, as we see the new GI benefits that you just were explained to earlier, you know, we would hope that that will help economically as well, because there'll be some federal monies that can come in and help support that. So removing this barrier, I think, is wise. It's good for athletes, ought to be good for soldiers, sailors, Marines. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paula Brown. I'm the Deputy Director at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I'm here today in support of House Bill 2571, which allows out-of-state veterans with honorable discharges to pay tuition and fees at a reduced rate. House Bill 2571 is one of the 39 recommendations of the Governor's Task Force on Veteran Services. In working with Representative Edwards, the Oregon University System, and community colleges, we believe we have created a solid bill through the Dash 3 Amendment, which clarifies that if a veteran's federal VA benefits pay out-of-state tuition rates, those rates will apply, as well as note that distance learning is not included for in-state tuition rates. The task force found that enabling veterans' education is a major component of a veteran's success in life, which is why the task force recommended reduced tuition for out-of-state veterans. This bill is consistent with what other states in the nation are doing, led by Ohio, which was the first to offer residency for all veterans. We believe that the Oregon post-secondary education system has a lot to offer, and drawing veterans to Oregon will enhance both our campus and our economy when those veterans graduate and enter the workforce. I will conclude my testimony with that and be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions?
Thank you very much.
Joe Holliday? Oh, is this a kind of a group here? I'm sorry, Tim. I wasn't quite sure who where the line was going together. I see it now.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tim Inman, aide to Representative Chris Edwards. I'll be brief. Since Representative Edwards testified before you a couple weeks ago, our office with the Department of Veterans Affairs and OUS has worked on coming together on some amendments that satisfy the university's concerns at the same time still move us forward toward providing this benefit to veterans. Representative Edwards wanted to be here, but he is in committee, so he just wanted to reiterate his support for the Dash 3 amendments and this concept moving forward, and also commend OUS, Joe Holliday, Lisa Pinero, and Department of Veterans Affairs, Tom Mann, and Paul Evans for coming together and working toward a common solution on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on Representative Edwards' behalf.
And Madam Chair and members of the committee, Joe Holliday again from the Oregon University System. I will echo what Tim said, and I'm very grateful to Representative Edwards and his staff and ODVA and everyone that worked with us. We feel we have a set of amendments here in Dash 3 that the Oregon University System supports fully and urges for pass.
Thank you. Could you maybe just briefly let us know a little bit of the reasoning that went into the need for the Dash 3s?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd be happy to do that. We approached the amendment process with the philosophy of trying to use federal benefits first, leveraging all the federal benefits in the post-GI Bill and the Yellow Ribbon Program that were available, in addition to vocational rehabilitation benefits that are available from the federal government, and then coming up with an equivalent tuition reduction for veterans who are not 100% qualified for the Yellow Ribbon Program and offering an equivalent tuition reduction for those veterans.
So and that would include those who didn't have a full 36 months and
correct.
Had eligibility, a lesser percentage of eligibility.
Correct. We would discount the difference between resident and non-resident tuition 50%, which is what the Yellow Ribbon Program does as well. And I'll also add here that 6 of our 7 state universities have already volunteered to participate in the Yellow Ribbon Program. Eastern Oregon University, our 7th institution, does not charge non-resident rates. Therefore, there was no reason for them to participate. I do see that this amendment says that the universities shall participate, and we will.
Thank you. Are there any questions for these individuals? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to just kind of further the comment that I just really appreciate the work that you've done, and Tim and Representative Edwards, and getting together with the universities. You've just done a phenomenal job, and I really appreciate the fact that, you know, early on you could have found a way to say no, and you didn't do that. You found a way to make this happen and be able to further this benefit for a veteran. So I think everybody involved in the process should be commended for your efforts. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
All right.
We have Mac McDonald. And maybe we could go ahead and have Jonathan Sanford and Jacob Meets come up as well. We've still got 3 chairs here.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mac McDonald, United Veterans of Oregon. I just appreciate that this state has picked up on this. Ohio, Illinois, Wisconsin were the 3 leaders. 15 other states have followed and are doing exactly the same thing as we're proposing today. We ask that this goes forward with a due pass.
Thank you.
Hello, Madam Chairwoman and committee. My name is Jonathan Sanford. I'm a student at Portland State University, a veteran of the Iraq War, and a member of the Student Veterans Association. I'll try to make this brief. I am a little bit nervous, but I will try to make it brief. In the Army, we have something called an AAR, an after-action review. And for all the vets that are here, know basically what that is. So you have an event, and after you get together and you talk about it, and you say, hey, what happened, and how can we do this better? I, as a student, have seen the chaos and struggle that ensues for veterans who are trying to enter the university from out of state. And the reason why this is important is that there's a point that hasn't been brought up about access for veterans. And I will get to that immediately. I do have some testimonies to enter in on the bill in support of 2571, and I'll hand them out. There are two students and a Vietnam veteran who also support this bill, and you'll be seeing that soon. I have a few points I want to bring up, I guess. I'm sorry.
Don't worry about it.
Thank you.
So
as doing an AR, or as veterans, the testimony I'm entering in today is about how the usability of the previous GI Bill has been applied in application in the state versus out-of-state students. As civilians and legislators, it seems like we owe it to the people who are actually benefiting from this program to listen to them. And in that token, the point I want to make is the bill isn't just about cost. Some of the costs have been brought up that may cost a university out-of-state versus in-state tuition, but it's also about access. As an out-of-state veteran, currently has to wait a full year to take classes at less than three-quarters time to be eligible for in-state tuition. As part of the testimony I'm applying or bringing in, that'll be pointed clear. The point is, I don't know how many of you can take years off your life to wait to get into school, but neither can a veteran. They don't have money. They don't really have usually time when they're coming back easily. In effect, a veteran who chooses Oregon as a destination of choice to live to go to school would have to wait a full year at 8 credit hours, which is not enough to allow the student to apply for a work-study position, an actual job through the VA or anything. Or to use the full GI Bill that we've gotten testimony on today about. At this time, the veteran has to wait a full year to be able to get onto the GI Bill that we know to get onto the in-state tuition, and they're ticking off the 36 months that they get on the GI Bill. So they're sitting waiting for a year, burning into their GI Bill time as an out-of-state student waiting to get to be an in-state status for a full year. Anyways, in effect, the veteran has to be, in some ways, a second-class citizen for a year before being allowed to take care of the GI Bill benefits. And I think this goes against the whole spirit of having a veteran come to Oregon to say, I want to be part of this university system, I want to be a paying taxpayer, and I want to be part of what Oregon is. And I think it just goes to show that if we do pass this, and if the committee does pass this on to the Ways and Means, or how you may, it shows that we're pushing forward to say, hey, we don't have to have those veterans coming to Oregon as second-class citizens. And I would strongly, strongly support 2571, and hope you guys would as well. And I would answer any questions. Like I said, we are students at Portland State. It was one of the three universities that was looked at by the task force. About what to do, about how to change universities and veterans benefits at universities, and we can say how it's been working for us. So.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jacob Meeks, the former president of the Student Void Veteran Association of Portland State University, and I'll make this very brief because after everyone testified, I felt like there wasn't much to say left. Because it's all pretty much been said. I think Representative Escobar said something earlier that kind of stuck me, though. It would be nice that this was a federal matter and they just mandated it to all the states, because if you serve your country, you should be allowed to go where you want to get your education afterwards. Unfortunately, the federal government's not that way, so I'm happy to see that the states are taking the lead on this. And I will speak from personal experience very briefly. I come from Wyoming, and there was no way I was going back there when I got out of service, because there's no work there, and I had no desire to work on an oil rig or in a mine. So I had to come somewhere else, and Oregon seemed like a nice place. I was born here. I figured, why not actually see it? And fortunately for me, I had vocational rehab, which paid that out-of-state tuition for the federal government, but not everybody's that lucky, and I think this will be good for those few like me who come from states where there's not a lot of work beyond the stuff that we escape to the military for in the first place, so we don't really want to go back to it. So it's nice to be able to come places where we can find that education. So I do hope you pass this bill, and thank you for your time.
Welcome to Oregon.
It's nice to be here.
Are there any questions for these gentlemen?
Madam Chair, My colleague wrote me a note saying it's nice to see younger veterans coming forward to carry the torch for the cause. So I agree, and go Vikings.
Thank you very much.
I knew they had a stumbling block this weekend.
I can claim four universities that I have contributed substantial support for between yes. myself and my kids.
There's quite a number on many of our lists. Okay, was there anyone else who wanted to testify that I missed on this bill? I just wanted to be certain. Colleagues, we have before us the Dash 3s, and this is the second time that we've heard this bill. I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2571 and ask the committee's pleasure at opening a work session. Okay, we will open a work session on House Bill 2571. And we have before us Dash 3 amendments. It's going to Ways and Means, so it should be okay. The administrator was reminding me that we don't have fiscal impact ahead of us, although this is scheduled for subsequent referral to Ways and Means. If we get in trouble, we'll find out about it, I'm okay. sure.
I will find out.
I think we can send that to Ways and Means and sort that out, I believe, can we not?
We have tried hard this year not to do that and to try to get those things in front of us.
Well, let's beg for forgiveness instead of ask for permission, Madam Chair.
That's usually kind of what works out. We will ask that we get the fiscal on that expedited as it moves on to Ways and Means. So
yes, Madam Chair.
We need a motion on the amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make the motion that we move the proposed amendments of Dash 3 into House Bill 2571.
I have a motion for approval of the Dash 3 amendment to House Bill 2571. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Would you like to make the subsequent?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. I would like to make a motion that we would move that we would approve 2571 with the due pass recommendation and subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
As amended.
As amended. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We have a motion to move forward House Bill 2571 as amended with a due pass recommendations and subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Could we have you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Aye.
Excused.
Aye.
Aye.
Freeman.
Aye.
Matthews.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. House Bill 2571, as amended, is moved to Ways and Means. There being no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Thank you.
Madam Chair, will you?